ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Robert Kennedy Jr., President-elect Trump's pick for health secretary, is set to meet with more than two dozen senators. And ABC's Mary Bruce says Kennedy's views about vaccines will be a key focus.
Some Democrats highlighting Kennedy's other positions that fall outside the medical mainstream, including his opposition to fluoride in public drinking water. But Kennedy could win over some support on the left, especially for his fight against processed foods. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders suggesting he's open to supporting him.
A former FBI informant set to plead guilty today to lying about a phony bribery scheme involving President Biden and his son Hunter that formed a key pillar of the Republican impeachment inquiry in Congress. Local lawmakers in the Northeast continue to call for more federal support to deal with drone sightings, and Syria's ousted leader Bashar Assad, speaking for the first time since he fled for Russia, saying he never planned to flee and calling the rebels terrorists. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Act 10 ruling is raising the stakes for the state Supreme Court election in the spring. The controversial 13-year-old law strictly limited public sector bargaining rights in Wisconsin. Last week, a Dane County judge struck down a big portion of the law, but Republicans have already filed an appeal. Michael Childers is a labor education professor at UW-Madison. He says the law also brought the state back more than 50 years, as Wisconsin was a pioneer in the fight for workers' legal rights.
It was the first state in the nation that allowed formally for public sector bargaining and then became the first to basically greatly curtail bargaining rights for all but police and fire in the state.
He says Act 10 changed the ability of public sector workers in Wisconsin to have influence over their workplace. Wisconsin experienced the largest decline of union membership in the U.S. over the past decade. The case is almost certainly headed to the state Supreme Court. If Act 10 is struck down by Wisconsin's high court, it could open the door for a resurgence of union engagement across the state. The court currently has a liberal majority, so the public workers who filed the lawsuit hope justices act before the election. A report from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction found that students in the state are struggling in standardized testing, specifically in math. The report found that less than half of public school students scored as proficient in math during the 2023-24 school year, and school choice programs students had a math proficiency rate of about 28%. Education officials cited the COVID-19 pandemic as one of the major reasons for the declining test scores, forcing students to learn virtually to prevent the spread of the virus. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Packers defeat the Seahawks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Green Bay led 20-6 at the half and went on to win 30-13 over the Seahawks in Seattle. The Packers defense, 7 quarterback sacks, special teams with a good kick return and 3 field goals. On offense, wide receiver Romeo Doubs back from a concussion with 2 touchdown catches.
That's just part of us just getting better collectively as a core. Yeah, I just look forward to progress, cleaning up the details on tape and just moving on to the next opponent.
Quarterback Jordan Love.
Coming out fast, putting up some touchdowns early. You know, defense doing a great job getting the ball back for us. But, that's when we're at our best, is starting fast, getting the ball, putting up points, and going from there.
Packers linebacker Quay Walker left the game with an ankle injury. Seahawks quarterback Geno Smith having an MRI on his right knee after being sacked in the third quarter. Sam Howell took over the rest of the game. NBA, the Bucks getting ready to face the Thunder in the NBA Cup Finals in Vegas. Tip-off time tomorrow night at 7:30 with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
It is foggy with drizzle this morning. It is going to stay cloudy, becoming breezy by later this afternoon. Our high today, 42. Tonight, breezy, 28. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, cooler, 37. By Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high of only 31. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 36.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Here's why I'm glad I don't work in an office. My wife is always talking about, she's a teacher. They put donuts in the teacher's lounge. There's sweets, there's snacks. It wasn't that way here today, but Nikki keeps those Biscoff cookies out there. I probably ate 12 of those today. The phrase "you are what you eat" is very true, because I was sitting in the office earlier prepping the show and I felt kind of doughy and I'm like, I feel like a Biscoff cookie.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turn public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we continue our live coverage from the Seattle area, focusing on the Naval Air Station in Bremerton. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. And welcome to a Motown Monday. Hey, good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. How are you?
Doing fine, man. It's almost 50 degrees, man.
Yeah, the fog was ridiculous on
yeah,
my drive.
Yeah, man. It was, you know, I'm not going to complain about the fog, man, because we know what else it could have been, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But we've got a great show lined up for you this morning. Before I get introduce my guests, I want to say thank you to McCannon Brown and a homeless sanctuary. This past Saturday, I spent 4 hours with them as they gave Christmas gifts to children and families who clearly could not afford it. And, you know, the thing that I love so much about the McCannon Brown Homeless Sanctuary is all of these people, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of nondescript citizens of this nation who won't be benefiting like the rest of us. And what she does at a homeless sanctuary is offer people who are nondescript, who really don't matter to this society, and people who don't have time to think about these people. She certainly, her and all of those hundreds of volunteers every day offer hope, sustenance to American citizens who really don't seem to matter in the big picture. So congratulations. Thank you for inviting me. I always enjoy having an opportunity to share my time with you and the great people of the McCannon Brown Homeless Sanctuary. I want to welcome an award-winning journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, none other than Mr. John Dietrich. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Doing well, Earl. How are you doing this morning?
All right. You are an investigative reporter. You've been with the Journal for a long time. I've been reading your stuff for a long time. How many years?
20 years.
20 years. Well, it doesn't take long, does it?
It went fast. It went fast. I promise you that.
Well, hopefully you'll be there for another 20 because you do good work. We're going to talk today about a subject. You know, an article that you wrote in the Journal. How long ago was that?
We published this piece. It was in the print edition about 8 days ago. And then we always post online a few days before that. So, you know, it's going on 2 weeks.
So what people need to know is this article, when I got a chance to read it, it was heartbreaking. And in more ways than one, John, let's talk a little bit about why this article, you know, was so important for you to investigate.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, so I appreciate the kind words and introduction. And yeah, I have been blessed to be doing this work for a little while here at the Journal Sentinel. And I've covered the criminal justice system, police, safety, all that sort of stuff. Back in 2004, I covered that. And I have covered other things since then. I'm now on the investigative team. And a couple of years ago, I did this fellowship at Marquette, and we were looking at gun deaths across the state. And that was sort of the focus of last year's work, of how gun deaths were affecting every county in the state, specifically when you include suicide. This year, I wanted to turn my attention to a category of shootings that get a lot of attention, and rightly so, but actually are a small percentage. And these are accidental or unintended shootings. So I think everyone will be familiar with these sorts of scenarios where a child gets a firearm and will hurt themselves or somebody else. And so I really wanted to look into those and try to understand better about how they're happening in different parts of the state and then what's happening in the system. I guess one thing that I share at the beginning is that these are rare in terms of total, they're comparatively rare. So compared to other shootings, they are 1% of the total. That's for the whole population. When you get into children, they're 5% of the total of children shootings, and they get bigger. That percentage gets larger as the children, the child victims get
younger. Is this statewide or nationwide?
This is statewide and nationwide. These roughly run the same percentages. So, you know, so 1% nationwide, so what that looks like is in Wisconsin, and this is in terms of deaths. So it's important to understand that there's a lot more non-fatal that happened, but we're looking at CDC death numbers, state numbers. But so statewide, that may be anywhere from like two deaths to our biggest year was 7 deaths in 2022. But, you know, the other thing, though, is I don't want to make it sound like they're so rare does not mean unimportant. So very important, very tragic cases, and also preventable cases. So those are kind of the high level points that have come to and what I discovered as I started to get into this case.
So if you're just joining us, I'm joined by John Dietrich. He is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Now, this is an extensive, you know, expose that you put together. So clearly you did a lot of research, but you focused on this one particular case initially, and then you expanded to others. But this one particular case where a mother named Brianna Givens, unfortunately, her young child got a hold to a gun, her gun, and shot himself in the hand. You know, you hate to say, well, it's thank God that it was only his hand that that he wound up shooting himself, you know, and it could have clearly come out worse. But this poor mother and her life story and all the things behind it is what I think is so critically important, and the things that you pointed out in this article. Let's talk a little bit about this particular woman, Brianna Givens.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's, you described that well. I spoke to a number of parents that were charged in the system, and Brianna was the one that we chose to focus on. So Brianna Givens has 3 children. She lives in Milwaukee. She bought a firearm because of an incident that happened in 2020. She's a nurse, a nurse in 2020, and she had been involved in a situation with her cousin. Her cousin got into a dispute with somebody, and she got in the middle of, they were on the way to the grocery store. In any case, she ends up getting kidnapped, really, you know, in this, her cousin gets into a shootout, and she ends up being held at gunpoint with a gun to her head. And after that incident, there are no arrests no charges in the assailants. And there were some identification issues and so forth. In any case, she felt very much at risk. So she bought a gun and she with her three children, and she kept that gun close. She kept it loaded and she kept it under her mattress. Tucked under the mattress. Now, the day in question that this happened, which is in fall of 2020, she had worked she's working long days, as we'll recall the pandemic. And so she was suffering from back pain. She stopped at the clinic on the way home and urgent care and got a muscle relaxant prescription. So this is important to understand because this was the reason why her routine was different. She fell asleep, she tells me, earlier than she would have after taking the muscle relaxant. And when she woke up, her son Destin, who was two at the time, had shot himself in the hand. And what happens then is a series of, she was arrested immediately, and then she was in custody for several days, and she was charged with a felony in Milwaukee County, which I found in our investigation is very typical. It's almost every case, regardless of kind of the circumstances, and I say circumstances, the outcome, these are almost always felonies in Milwaukee County.
So one other thing, for those in this listening audience who may not know, she lives in a war zone. She lives in a community where shots fired commonplace. And so in certain parts and certain segments of the city of Milwaukee, it is a war zone. It's safer probably to live, to be in a war zone than it is in some communities, you know, in Milwaukee. And here's a single woman who has certainly gone through a horrendous time in her life. Nobody to protect her, she thinks, and her children. Again, she lives in a place where gunshots are, you know, the order of the day. And so she felt like she had to protect her family. And so the only way she could do that is to purchase a gun. There are many people in the society, John, who right now think that law enforcement cannot protect them and that they have to protect themselves.
That's true. And all those things you say about the city of Milwaukee, it's hard to envision, I think. And I don't live in the central city. I spent a lot of time there, but it's not the same day in, day out. So I think what you say is important, and to understand people's experiences to why they might buy, you know, a firearm. And that, let me just say right at the outset, too, that Brianna feels very, very bad about what happened. She is extremely regretful and remorseful and feels like She's not changing her mind or whatnot about her decision to buy a firearm. That was something she felt strongly about. It's just some steps that were different, but you lay it out very well. Gunshot every night, very difficult situation that she lives in, specifically in her case.
855-752-4842. My guess is award-winning investigative reporter John Dietrich of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're going to delve even deeper. Imagine having gone through what this poor mother went through and looking for someone to feel her pain and understand it. And what you get in the end is locked up and charged with a felony. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show, a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
News from the Center, WRCE.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down. Slower.
iZurvey is proven to slow GA progression.
iZurvey gets GA
ain't going slower.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
It was time to make our own Christmas traditions. For years, we've been trekking to both sets of in-laws, both Christmas dinners. It was just too much. So this year, we started to look for a place to get together in Alexandria, Minnesota. Christmas lights that will light up our kids' faces. A new adventure. Create some wonder. It makes us wonder, why didn't we do this sooner?
Start planning your time together in the Lakes area. Explore your holiday getaway options at explorealex.com.
Ho ho, the holidays are here, and it's time to pick a present from the grown-up gift list with Civic Media's statewide text to win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of the grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on the grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in the statewide contest. Ho ho ho!
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is John Dietrich. He's an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And so we're talking about, just so you guys know, we're going to have John on many times because there's so much information that I think is critically important that people need to hear. In so many different instances, and the fact that we have a judicial system in this case that doesn't always work. And just for the sake of information, I am a guy who does not own a gun. I've only had a gun in my hand one time in my 70 years of living, and that's when I went through an FBI training class last year. But I've never had a gun. I'm from a family of 13. My father never had guns in the house. My siblings don't own guns, and my nieces and nephews don't own guns. So I'm speaking from the perspective of a person who's been judgmental, John, at times when, you know, children would get a hold to guns and harm themselves because I've never, felt that if I've always felt that if you had a gun, you have a responsibility to protect your family, not just literally, but figuratively, you know. And in many instances, people, you know, get shot more times and people and loved ones with their own guns than somebody else coming from outside to address them.
Yeah, that's true. And statistically, we talk a little bit about that in the, you know, in the piece. I think one of the things that in this project I tried to do was sort of, it's such a volatile issue. I mean, any time you bring it, so it's sort of one of those third rails to bring up this, the issue of firearms. And I've tried to, in this project, in a couple of years, I spend a lot of time talking to gun owners to try to understand where people are coming from and understand what ideas and solutions gun owners particularly had. And that came up in this issue. One thing about this is repeated often about the presence of a firearm in the home. It is statistically more likely to be used against the person that, you know, to the harm rather than the so-called benefit of the person. That could be suicide or, you know, domestic violence or accidental in this case. I think it's also important to remember that risk is not distributed evenly. And so, you know, a lot of those statistics are across a broad area, say the state of Wisconsin. And so risk may be different in certain parts of the state. It may be also different depending on your situation. In other words, your life situation, domestic violence, you know, and so forth. And the other thing that I heard a lot from gun owners is, and non-gun owners, everybody, is the shared value of, you know, training, competency, you know, and continued training is an important component here.
Is it surprising to you, you know, you and I spoke earlier this morning, if I wanted to get a driver's license, you know, I've basically got to read the manual if I'm going to pass the test, and I've got to pass a you know, driver's test in order to be able to be a licensed driver. But does it make sense that I can buy a gun and not ever have to go through any training? I mean, it's just nonsensical to me that people are allowed to own weapons and that can, you know, take lives, and yet there are no laws that say they have to be trained in order to own that weapon. Law enforcement officers go through constant training with firearms. What sense does it make for citizens to have the same right to have that gun and yet no training?
Well, I hear this often about, especially with automobiles and you know, the driving test and registration, things like that are not present. You know, from talking to gun owners, the retort is, you know, vehicles are not in the Second Amendment, they're not in the Constitution, and you know, that sort of thing. And it is true, and not just that, but the way the Second Amendment has been you know, ruled upon by the Supreme Court, because there are some specific rulings that have happened in the recent years. You raise an interesting, really interesting, and I think pertinent point about firearms training with law enforcement. So I covered law enforcement. Before I did that, I was in Colorado and covered the military, and I deployed overseas a few times to Iraq in 2003 and so forth. So I saw a lot about how law enforcement and the military work with firearms. And the way it works there is, like, for new recruits, they don't ever put a live firearm in somebody's hand until a lot of training. And just hear me, I'm not advocating for one position or another. I'm just observing how it works in the military. It is very strictly controlled. You get what's called a rubber duck, which is basically something that feels weight-wise like a firearm, but is not a firearm. And you have to have a lot of training, same with law enforcement, before it happens. I should also point out, we talk a little bit about hunting in Wisconsin. You have to have training in firearms safety, hunter safety in that. We do not have that for a firearm that is kept for home defense. And we do have training required for concealed carry, but it's pretty light. It's pretty light.
You're tuned into a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is Mr. John Dietrich. He is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking about firearms, and you know, we're gonna delve even deeper because this situation that we're talking about with this poor mother, Ms. Givens, and what she's had to face. I think many of us, once we hear the true story of it and the double standards that exist, we would be outraged. So again, John Dietrich, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you on a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
It's Christmas.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Managing stress is a challenge for everyone today and is especially challenging for farmers when so many things are out of their control. But with the right support and resources, it is possible to navigate these pressures and reduce stress. Navigating Your Ag Business from Stress to Success is an online course sponsored by UW-Madison Division of Extension's Farm Management Program and the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Farm Center. Joy Kirkpatrick is a UW-Madison Division of Extension Farm Management Outreach Specialist.
Farmers have all kinds of things that can be stressors, and they can be different for each farm. So this program really helps farmers think about what their unique stressors might be in the moment and help them put together a plan that can help them address that stress.
By participating in this program, farmers can build a more resilient and sustainable future for their businesses and their families. Kirkpatrick says those interested can begin the next Navigating Your Ag Business from Stress to Success online course January 1st.
The online part where we meet as a group through Zoom live is actually going to be on Tuesday evenings from 6 to 7:30. But there are online stuff that they need to read and watch videos and things like that on their own as well.
For more information about the online course, go to go.wisc.edu/NYAB or email joy.kirkpatrick@wisc.edu or call 608-263-3485. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Drew Barrymore says she has been warned by her talk show guests not to be so touchy. The host often holds the hands of her guests and is very huggy and says she is working on not invading people's space and respecting boundaries. In a recent appearance on the show, Wicked star Cynthia Erivo said she didn't mind as she is very affectionate as well and gave permission to Touchy McGee to be affectionate during her appearance. Grabby Moore also held hands with Ariana Grande when she made an appearance on the show. I wonder if she would be as handsy with Seth Rogen. Doubtful. Third time is a charm for Anne Hathaway, who says Christopher Nolan saved her career. I had no idea it was ever in danger, but show folk do tend to exaggerate. The Oscar-winning actress says being cast in her third Christopher Nolan film let her know she was doing something right. Other Nolan films the actress has appeared in include The Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, and Oppenheimer. Hathaway also appears in the new Nolan movie, which people know very little about, and that's the way Christopher Nolan likes it. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
It is foggy with drizzle this morning. It is going to stay cloudy, becoming breezy by later this afternoon. Our high today, 42. Tonight, breezy, 28. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, cooler, 37. By Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high of only 31. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now, 37.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turned public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Luke Matheris, you let the dogs out.
I let the dogs out. It was me. After about 15 minutes, I go out there and I'm like, what is this mound? An opossum playing dead in the middle of the yard. So I'm out there kind of hollering, like trying to corral the dogs. And then we finally got Aurora to come in the house, stepped away for a little bit, came back and was gone. I really hope that it remembers this traumatic experience and never comes back in my yard again.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Dom Selvia. Coming up Monday, we'll talk gas prices heading into the holidays, and it's not too late to run for local office. We'll tell you how.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
All right. Welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. So today I've dedicated all of the music to Tower of Power and their very special Christmas album. On a Motown Monday, my guest is Mr. John Dietrich. He is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And so we're talking about, you know, many different aspects of a story of a woman named Brianna Givens, who unfortunately, her young 2-year-old son got a hold to her gun and shot himself in the hand. So John, I guess where we need to go next is the fact that there is a deputy district attorney named Matthew Trobison, who you talked to, who was pressing to have felony charges brought against this mother after all of the pain that she's gone through. Your thoughts on why he was pressing to have the felony charges brought against a grieving mother who was already going through a lot of pain?
Well, that's right. So this is as I alluded to, the Milwaukee handles this differently. Our investigation found that almost every single case since 2017 in Milwaukee County, it's about 54 cases, have been charged as felony. Outstate, there are felonies, but it's much less likely that they're going to be charged as felonies outstate. Torbenson, you mentioned him. He's deputy district attorney, so he handles all the cases, not only these kinds of cases, but other child abuse cases where children die at the hands of another or are parents and caregivers and so forth. So in talking at length with Matt Torbenson, who I've known for a long, he's been here in the DA's office as long as I've been a reporter. His view of this is that this is very serious conduct, that, you know, these easily could have been deaths, that there has to be a strong message sent, and that it he also is trying to accomplish taking away somebody's right to own a gun by charging these as felonies. And the way this has happened, there is actually a state law passed in 91 that envisions that this would be a misdemeanor. But Torbenson and his team, those prosecutors working for him, do no longer use that statute for the most part, and use a statute that was actually passed with the help of Torbenson in 2017. He helped write the current law, and it's a child abuse, so it's felony child neglect. And, you know, he said at that point, yes, he understands that there is suffering on the part of the parents, the grief, the punishment that happens. His view is that there are other people that he has to stand up for, the victims and other family members in society that need to be represented here.
The real issue is that there's a double standard. And as you know, so aptly wrote, 65% of Black people in the state of Wisconsin live in Milwaukee. And so these cases are charged differently in Milwaukee County than they are outside of Milwaukee County. What do you attribute that to?
Well, so one of the things to keep in mind is that these incidents happen more often. So roughly half of the incidents that we found over this 8-year period happen in Milwaukee County.
Because there are more people in Milwaukee County than
there are true. It is true, but it goes beyond population. In other words, we don't have half the population in the state. So it is higher, but you're right. We have a larger population, but it goes beyond the population. And so, you know, I think it's complex reasons why that may be. That, as we talked about, the feeling of insecurity, home defense, police response, these are all complicated things that play into this. But this response being handled differently does end up creating a racial disparity. Because when we look at this in Milwaukee County, almost all of the entire caseload is African American. Now, it's important to note, I don't have incidents of cases where white defendants were not charged. So I don't have that case. But in talking to experts about this, their point was that certainly There might be differences in the occurrence of these happening, but not like 100% or 99 point, you know, whatever percent. So there is this. And, you know, and I mentioned this to Torbenson, and he says, well, yeah, but all of my victims are African-American. So all my children are African-American. And that's something that I can't, overlook. But as you point out, there are outstate, when I say outstate, outside of Milwaukee, there are instances of white defendants being charged with similar conduct with misdemeanors.
So I guess what I would say, John, is, and I've said this before, it is certainly, this is not an easy out. It's, you know, she certainly was careless with leaving a gun under her mattress. You know, regardless of how, you know, dangerous the environment is. And yes, I would think that what we are looking for from, as a citizen of the state of Wisconsin, is for there to be some punishment. But here's a single mother. And once you attach a felony, long term, what do you do to her and the child and her children that you are talking about protecting? Once you connect her to a felony, she stands a chance on losing her employment and never gaining employment again. So is he causing a bigger problem long term for her and her family by charging her for the felony? And, you know, in the end, is that the right answer?
You raise some really good, and people may not appreciate this. When you look at the end of Brianna's case, right, she pled out to a misdemeanor and she served a probation sentence. So she didn't, other than the initial. But here's the whole reality of what happened. She's charged with a felony. She's a nurse. So she loses her job immediately because a felony neglect charge is, no job in healthcare hands on. So she and she was in school trying to become an RN. She ended up she lost that dream. She was 2 years into that. But you can't finish that degree because you can't be hands on to finish your degree because you have the neglect. And even though it's a misdemeanor conviction, she ended up, that's going to be a prohibitor. It also looks like a felony because on CCAB, that's the way it's marked online. Child Protective Services came. She ended up being evicted, was homeless for a while. And, you know, and now she's back to waiting tables, a job that she had when she was a teenager.
855-752-4842. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You know, John, I clearly understand from the perspective of the DA that, you know, we have a responsibility to protect the children as a society. I'm not unmindful of that. But at the same time that he's attempting to do that, you know, you've kind of destroyed the family. And because waiting tables is not going to be, you know, is not going to be able to, for a single mother with three children, anything that's going to allow her to live any kind of quality of life. And long term, the children are going to have a difficult time. As they grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the long-term impacts of being charged with a felony are, I mean, just that decision to start at a felony is seismic because it ends up having immediate impacts and then long-term, you know, impacts. Because if you start at that high level, you're more likely to, and talking to Brianna, she did not, I mean, she ended up having to take a parenting class and, you know, there was some other supervision. She had a gun safety class. She didn't disagree with any of that. And you know, in talking to some folks around the system, it's like, is there a way to do that without putting the, you know, the felony in there was the question.
So Tony said, I get they are sending a message, but no one's circumstances are improved from this outcome.
Yeah, and you raised it that, you know, in terms of long-term cycles that perpetuates, that this is what we really wanted to raise in the article was really help people to feel, because I think people might not understand what the pain is, and again, to switch over to what Torbenson sees, as he says very poignantly in the article, you know, he sees the autopsy photos of these children when they die. He sees all this evidence. And so we just really wanted to surface, is this the right approach in these kind of cases?
So when you go back, and as you did in a thorough investigation, and you go back to former Governor Mike McCallum and what their rationale was for creating the law that they created. And as I read that, you know, he clearly stated that back then, you know, when they came up with that, that maybe today that should be looked at again and tailored in a different manner. Have you been able to talk with anybody in the legislature who may agree with what former Governor McCallum had to say?
Well, former Governor McCallum, what he's looking at is he's talking about how this law was passed in 1991 that would make it a misdemeanor. There's some elements in that that are important. One is that the grief of the parent should be considered by the DA. It's not shall language, so it does allow for charging. Deputy DA Torvenson said that they do consider that. The other thing, though, is that there is a 7-day waiting period for arrest. We don't see that being done. And the reason it isn't in Milwaukee County is because they're charging it under another offense. But there is a lot of interest in the, in this law. And there has been laws that have been acts that have been introduced, legislation have been introduced. And I know those co-sponsors are interested to see our investigation and say, can we tailor new proposals in a way that takes into account the reality of what's being lived in Milwaukee County and across the state.
You know, Tony says, where does John see this issue going in the future? Where is it trending?
Well, I think there's going to be more discussion right now in terms of the safe storage law did not advance. Representative Andraka from Whitefish Bay has put this forward with some of her colleagues on the Democratic side. It hasn't advanced, but it'll be interesting to see if this might change the discussion a little bit, because, again, it raises some issues of, is there another way to bring this up? I guess the other thing we're talking about too is that the idea of training, the idea of, because we can talk a little bit about this, that we did find some pretty innovative ideas around safety in the home when it came to firearms. And I just wonder if there might be more efforts in that area.
Well, you know, Brianna mentioned that, you know, she had a gun in the past, and so she thought about, and it got stolen or lost or something. And she had thought about, well, what happens if someone does break in and I've got the gun in a lock kit box? Mm-hmm. And so by the time I get to the lock box and get it open, I'm not going to be able to protect myself and my family. So we want to talk a little bit more about that, you know, what that really means. And if there are any others in this listening audience who feel the same way, I know that that's the law. If you got this gun, it's got to be locked away in the lock box. If somebody breaks in, you're not going to be able to get to it. And that's one of the reasons why she had this gun under her mattress, for her fear that they'd break in and she wouldn't have time to go and get it to protect herself and her family. 855-752. My guest is John Dietrich, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you on a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political, by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turned public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
Welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. My guest is John Dietrich. He is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Center. So, John, so many different aspects of this. In the end, this poor mother, Brianna Givens, life has been turned inside down and upside down, inside out and upside down. And yes, you know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to say that she has culpability in what happened to her because she left the gun, a loaded firearm. Basically, you know, I don't know how you think that it's all right to put a loaded firearm under a mattress. She kind of let herself down and her family. And so, you know, yeah, she should certainly suffer some for that. But all of us make mistakes. And I don't know what's to be gained once again by destroying this woman's life. So what happens from here, John? Is this going to be talked about on the state level? Is this something, because it's so rare, that maybe they don't think it's important enough?
Well, as I said, the law passed in 91, and nothing's happened in the law since then other than this 2017 law on child neglect. And so several efforts have been made around this. You know, interestingly, again, the laws, the proposals have been coming primarily from Democrats, not from Republicans. And I don't know if the sponsors of the law, well, I know that they do not fully appreciate how the law is being applied and how this issue is. And actually talking to researchers around the country into this, because this is a big effort to pass child access protection laws statewide or nationwide. And so some appreciation of what the secondary or unintended consequences of these laws, I think, talking to a researcher from Harvard, he's looked into this issue a lot and had not thought about the cases like Breonna Givens, like what actually happens in the long run. There is, separate from like new laws, there's also, I had a chance to speak and get to know some trainers, some gun safety trainers. Jair Vance and Theron Rogers do a lot of work in the city, particularly with African-American women. And as I talk to gun trainers around this, they tell me that there is absolutely a possibility or a reality of keeping a firearm secured in a safe and not accessible to children, but accessible to the parent or the homeowner who wants them. In other words, that is a solvable problem, and it requires practice. It requires a safe, not getting probably one of these cable locks that are not so helpful with the little keys and such, but safes. And then it requires practicing and practicing, repeatedly, because it's not a benign object. You know, this is something that has the ability to take life. And so they tell me that there are ways to train and that there is a lot of, conscious effort that can go into this, but it really takes, takes a commitment. And when you're a single mom, I mean, I'm just looking at the realities of all the situation. It's very difficult, and trying not to shame here, but to understand that there is a way, ahead on this.
John, do you think people, again, I don't own a weapon, but do you think people who do own them and who buy them in this instance for protection, many people buy them for other reasons, but it's specifically for if they have to, in protecting themselves, taking somebody else's life. I don't know if people really think that through, John, because, they don't understand. And that's why the training is so important, because people think that, okay, if I got the gun and somebody comes in and I shoot them, I feel threatened. They think that automatically the courts are going to side with them, but they don't know the intricacies of the law and how their lives could be forever changed.
That's true. I mean, I think that when I talk to trainers, a couple things. One is that if you do shoot somebody and it's self-defense, or you think of it that way, the jury may not be your friends at the gun club. It's a whole different thing. And the other thing you've got the situation of when you're looking at, just the implications of that. I mean, the recommendation is before anybody buys a gun, take a class first and really understand, go down the implications of all of what this really looks like. And if you want to make that, because it's a big decision.
So John Dietrich is one of the investigative reporters at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're going to have him back again and again and again, and we're going to continue to talk about, this issue. Not just this issue, but guns and the connectivity of it to the American people. I think we really need to take a deep dive, and John is doing that. John, thank you. We'll be in touch with you again soon.
Thanks, Earl. Really appreciate it.
All right. Coming up, we're going to be joined by Jerry Wilson, and we're going to be talking about Medicare, but we're also going to talk about the pilot trickster.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk about news deserts and what that means to our politics. We'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turned public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President-elect Trump's cabinet nominees remain the focus on Capitol Hill. Robert Kennedy Jr. will meet with more than two dozen senators this week. But as those meetings continue, ABC Stephen Portnoy says there's another priority, keeping the government funded. Text of a short-term agreement did not materialize over the weekend.
5 days before a shutdown deadline, there's still no agreement on enhanced aid to cash-strapped farmers. There is still hope for a deal and just enough time to get it onto President Biden's desk if the text can be released quickly. It's expected a short-term stopgap would keep government agencies funded through mid-March to allow time for the new Congress and the Trump administration to come up with a broader spending package that reflects their priorities.
Elected leaders from several northeastern states continue to call on the federal government to give them more resources to address drone sightings. In his first statement since fleeing to Russia, ousted Syrian leader Bashar Assad said he never wanted to flee but left when it became too dangerous to stay. This is ABC News.